This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, November the 26th. You are listening to Open Mic. It is the week of Thanksgiving, and with that, we all give thanks for the blessings in our lives. Of course, one of the blessings of being a Detroiter is the sports tradition that comes with Thanksgiving. Of course, football. And there will be football played at Ford Field on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Lions and Packers tomorrow in the annual Thanksgiving Day game. Then the MHSAA football finals for half the divisions on Friday. Michigan State and Maryland meet in a Big Ten matchup on Saturday night. Then on Sunday, the other half of the MHSAA state football finals. So a lot to look forward to. And I want to start this show with one of our sportscasters from Wayne State University, Gabe Loper, who chronicles the history of Thanksgiving Day football in Detroit. Now, it's a tradition that dates back all the way back to 1934. But why Detroit and why on Thanksgiving? From Bobby Lane to Barry Sanders to Calvin Johnson to present day, here's an oral history from Wayne State University's Gabe Loper on a tradition we all look forward to.
I'm Gabe Loper, and today we're digging into one of the biggest traditions in American sports culture, the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving Day. It's football, turkey, and Detroit. You really can't separate them anymore. But how do we get here? Why Detroit, and why has this tradition lasted nearly a century? Let's rewind to 1934. The Lions had just moved from Portsmouth, Ohio. Their new owner, G.A. Richards, wanted to make a splash. Here's a challenge, though. Detroit was a Tigers town, and the Lions were struggling to get their attention. So Richard comes up with a bold idea. Let the Lions play on Thanksgiving, and let's put it on national radio. He made a huge deal with NBC to broadcast the game coast to coast across 94 stations. A huge move at the time. Suddenly, the Detroit Lions weren't just a local team. They were being piped into the homes across America while families carved their turkey that first Thanksgiving game. November 29th, 1934, Lions versus Bears at the University of Detroit Stadium. Ticket sales completely sold out. However, the Bears won 19-16, but a tradition was born. After 1934, the Lions committed to Thanksgiving football every single year, with only one exception, from 1939 to 1944 during World War II. From the late 1940s to 1960s, Thanksgiving became a stage where some of Detroit's brightest stars shined. Bobby Lane, with that gritty, old-school swagger. Doak Walker, one of the greatest early Lion legends. And, of course, Alex Karras, who turned defensive dominance into entertainment long before he became a movie star. In the 1950s, the Thanksgiving game was officially Detroit's holiday. Families built their days around it. Michigan, it was turkey, stuffing, and Lions football. In that order. And remember, for decades, Detroit was the only NFL team to play on Thanksgiving. It was their thing, their tradition, their spotlight, until the Cowboys also joined on the Turkey Day fun in 1978. Fast forward to the 90s, when the Thanksgiving game became more of a national showcase because the greatest to ever do it, Barry Sanders, Barry turned Thanksgiving into a highlight reel. His most legendary performance, 1997 versus the Chicago Bears. In that game, he rushed for 167 yards and 3 touchdowns. In the game, Detroit dominated 55-20. If you watch the tape, it looks like the Bears defense was trying to tackle smoke. Thanksgiving Day became Berry Day, and kids across the country, especially here in Michigan and the Detroit area, grew up thinking the holiday wasn't complete until number 20 broke a few ankles. When Berry retired, a new superstar took center stage. Calvin Johnson, Megatron. His most iconic Thanksgiving moment came in 2015 against the Eagles when he pulled in 3 touchdown catches from Matthew Stafford. Stafford, by the way, holds the record for the most Lions touchdowns on Thanksgiving. The guy absolutely feasted. And in the 2010s, the Lions quietly built a reputation. The teams did not want to face Detroit on Thanksgiving. From 2013 to 2016, the Lions won 4 straight holiday games. Detroit might have struggled in other parts of the season, but Turkey Day, that was their home turf. Of course, we can't talk about history without mentioning the tough years, especially from 2004 to 2012. The Lions went through a brutal Thanksgiving stretch, including the 0-16 season in 2008. Those years were tough. The rest of the country joked about the Lions ruining Thanksgiving. But here's the thing. Detroit never lost the tradition. Even in the hardest seasons, Ford Field was sold out. The city kept showing up. The fans kept believing, even if it meant brown bags on the heads of fans. In a weird way, that loyalty became part of the story, too. Now enter Dan Campbell, the kneecap-biting, culture-shifting, energy-driving head coach of the modern-day Lions. Under Campbell, the Lions have attempted to reclaim Thanksgiving as a symbol of pride. Despite Dan Campbell's 1-3 record on the holiday, the team is more talented, and the first time in decades, they're seen as a legitimate contender in the NFL. And fans have noticed. Detroit's Thanksgiving game was one of the top-rated broadcasts of the entire NFL regular season. When it started in 1934 as a marketing stunt, has become one of the NFL's most beloved traditions, and Detroit is still at the home of it all. So where does this tradition go next? With names like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jared Goff, and Aiden Hutchinson, the Lions are promising something fresh, because apparently decades of disappointment needed a rewrite. Maybe this is the era where Detroit finally turns Thanksgiving wins into January runs, though history suggests maybe is doing most of the heavy lifting there. This is Open Mic. I'm Gabe Loper. Happy Thanksgiving.
Isn't it something how team owner George Richards set out to create a little buzz for his new professional football team all the way back in 1934? And now it's become an annual tradition the entire country looks forward to. Now, here's a little bit of trivia for you. George A. Richards not only owned the Detroit Lions, but he also owned this radio station, WJR. And he was responsible for WJR moving to a 50,000-watt radio station in 1935, the year after the first Thanksgiving Day football game played in Detroit. As we take our first break, I want to turn it over to the voice of the Detroit Lions, Dan Miller. Here are his favorite Thanksgiving Day memories. Much more to come right here on Sportscaster's Open Mic.
You know, when you work in the media in Detroit, you know exactly where you're going to be on Thanksgiving. And for most of us, there's no place we'd rather be. The tradition that we have is one that just brings the heat every year. You can feel the electricity downtown from the moment you arrive. In particular, the past several years when the Lions have started to improve and play meaningful games. Players all understand what it means to be a Lion on Thanksgiving and the history behind this one. Remember, Dan Campbell played on Thanksgiving as a Cowboy, as a Lion. And now he's involved as a head coach. Some of my favorite memories, the game against the Steelers in 98 with the Jerome Bettis botch coin toss that led to a Detroit win. The Darius Slay interception against the Vikings that led to a last-minute victory. The most famous game, Thanksgiving Day Massacre, 1962. Lions sacked the Packers and Bart Starr 11 times and beat Green Bay in a year in which they won the championship. That was the only loss they had all season, Thanksgiving Day. In Detroit, players and coaches all have different ways of celebrating. Many tell me they have family in town, packing their house. Some come to the game. Some stay back and cook. But for them, just like us, it is a time to spend with the ones you love. That's what we do. It's a time in our house when everybody comes together. Some cook, some head for the game. It's a great day. Even better if the Lions can win. And believe me, if they do, that Thanksgiving dinner tastes just a little bit better.
Earlier in the show, we chronicled the history of the Thanksgiving Day tradition of professional football. It was 1934. It was the Lions and Bears in the inaugural Thanksgiving Day game. Now, this year, it'll be the Lions and Packers in an all-important NFC North matchup. The division still very much within reach for both teams. Chicago sitting atop the standings at 8-3, but Green Bay at 7-3-1, Detroit at 7-4. And there'll be three NFL games tomorrow. Obviously, Lions and Packers to kick things off, then the Chiefs and Cowboys in the late afternoon, and then the nightcap between Cincinnati and Baltimore. And here to preview the entire slate of NFL games tomorrow are our Sportscaster.com originals, Cooper Schoenberg from Indiana University and Carter Lutz from the University of Miami.
This Thursday, November 27th, it is our Detroit Lions taking on the Green Bay Packers in their 191st meeting. Here on Sportscaster, I'm Cooper Schoenberg alongside Carter Lutz, and we will be recapping what looks and appears to be an unbelievably fun matchup on Turkey Day, one of my favorite holidays. Great food, great fun with the family and friends, and even better football. This is going to be an unbelievable matchup with a lot of playoff and divisional implications. Green Bay, 6-3-1, have the head-to-head right now over us in half a game with that weird tie. The Detroit Lions, 7-4, but we're at home. Okay. You know, the growth adjustments that were there week one in Lambeau Field, already a tough place to play and a tough place to play against a stacked defense after getting Micah Parsons and a new John Morin, a new Calvin Shepard, you know, but this is the 12th game of the season, right? We know how to play with each other, you know, iffy game against the Giants, but a win is a win is a win. And I'm really excited to see what they do this Thursday, Carter.
It's going to be very interesting to see because back in week one, if you don't remember, Lions got manhandled, absolutely smoked by the Packers. And after a couple good games, after a small winning streak, you think when, you know, we get down the line, Lions, Packers, it's going to even out. Interesting to see where we're at now, closer to the same record. That NFC North is bunched up. The whole NFC is really bunched up. And it's a crucial game. It's as crucial of a game as the Lions have had all season. But they don't look the best that they have. And there's a lot of question marks. And that game on Sunday, I know you said a win is a win is a win. There's some serious things in that game, especially going into overtime against the Giants when you only got 3 days of rest following it. I think there's a lot of things to be worried about. We'll start with you when we're actually previewing the game. What's the area? What's the position group that the Lions need to thrive in?
It's the offensive line. Because in the first matchup, this guy, Jared Goff, who is just an unbelievable quarterback, unbelievably accurate quarterback, but when he's rushed and he gets outside of the pocket, those legs ain't running too far. That arm, you know, can go a mile away, but the legs, they're not doing much. I mean, you have Michael Parsons, you have Rashawn Gary, you have all of these guys that can hurt you in so many ways. And last week, you know, Brian Burns, Abdul Carter, these guys got to him like it was nothing. You try running it up the middle, aside from Jahmyr Gibbs, Sexy Dexy Lawrence is right there to swallow you up and tackle you down. So for Tate, for Taylor, for Graham, for Penei, for all these guys that are great, they are Pro Bowlers. Penei, in my opinion, biasly maybe, but the best at what he does in the entire NFL. They need to work as a collective group. They need to stop this rush that is going to just be thrown at you like a tsunami. Because if it all comes collapsing down, Jared Goff is not going to know what to do, and we are going to see a repeat of what we saw week one. But if they're able to stay poised and stay true to themselves, and they know what they can do that we've seen over the past, you know, three seasons, not as much this season, but here or there, like a couple games, Goff's going to have a lot of time, and he's going to make this Green Bay defense pay in a lot of ways, and then I think our defense is going to take care of it, Carter.
It's a good point, Cooper, because yeah, the two hardest games of the season, the Lions have played Eagles in that Packers game, pressure up the middle the whole way through, Goff, people in his face, can't figure it out, bad offensive performances.
Yeah, but it's tough to beat a good team twice, right?
That's a good point.
And for us to be at home, special turkey day, and I know those big boys on the line are going to want to celebrate with a turkey leg or two or three or four, right? So we're going to see what kind of, you know, extra Panay's motivation.
I want to see him holding the fat leg. And saying we earned this.
I want some tenderism. I want that meat falling off the bone. Pause. But you understand what I'm saying. I want David Montgomery with his annual carrot. Okay? Shout out to the vegetarians out there. But I'm excited to see what happens in the Lions game. One pride. Here we go. On to the next, though. Because this is a phenomenal slate. This is really fun.
The games are good. The games are enticing.
Give me the next
All the over-unders are high this whole weekend. The other two games we got, both over-unders, are sitting at 52.5. So grab your popcorn, get ready. Sit back, relax.
A good one.
Enjoy the show this Thanksgiving Eve. First game, 4:30 kickoff. Chiefs traveling to Dallas. Maybe a couple weeks ago you thought this was going to be an 8, 9, 10-point spread with the way Kansas City was playing, with the way Dallas was playing. Dallas Cowboys have gotten hot. They've caught a little something, Cooper.
I know you got a little special place in your heart after this last week.
Yeah.
Right, we're gonna take the bets aside, but let's just say the boys came through when we needed them most. And to come down 21-0 and to do it at home, I think speaks volumes to how they play at home. And now, once again, you know, a little extra motivation. Turkey Day is special for these teams that always get to play, being the Cowboys, being the Lions. I don't know. What do you see from this team? What do you like? What's changed in them?
Well, talking about the Cowboys specifically, it sucks that the Monday before the trade deadline, they lost a crucial game at home, Monday Night Football, to Arizona. They lost that game to bring them up to 5 wins. They have a tie on the season. Fast forward 2 weeks later, we're here now. They're at 5-5-1, and they're one of the hottest teams in the NFL. You have to think they have an outside shot to make the playoffs. So they got full steam ahead, momentum. And when they made that trade for Quinnen Williams, it not only made the interior of the defensive line better, but the rest of the defense better. Overall, a really struggling defense because Quinnen Williams, a nose tackle right in the middle of that, stops the run, just gets everyone to their spots, and everything moves better. So overall, that Dallas defense shut down the Eagles in the second half on Sunday. The offense is humming after a couple mistakes. I like Dallas a lot because when we look at Kansas City, they're just trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And when you're trending in the wrong direction, you have a short week. It's usually not a recipe for success.
Here's the thing. And one with Dallas, this game goes hand in hand with the Lions because if the Lions are able to come out and get the win, they move to 8-4 in a really good driver spot in the NFC North. But they're only going to get the win with kind of what I believe with what I said. Like, if the offensive line is able to contain their linebackers and defensive line, then we're going to be really good. They're going to need to be able to do the same the following week at home against the Cowboys. So you're taking on a Quinnen Williams. You're taking on a Kenny Clark. And it's really enticing, interesting to see how that goes down. But this is Patrick Mahomes with the season on the line. Not the game on the line, with the season on the line. Playing a really good Colts team. With when everybody thought, okay, game's done, what, it was like 20-9 or something, and they go on a 14-0 run, they take it away in overtime, game time. I mean, that's what he does. That's what the best player in the league does. He doesn't have to be the MVP, but he's the best player because he goes to the Super Bowls, he wins the games, he wins the big-time matchups. That's what I could see, keeping the season thriving, chugging along. But chugging along in this, what is the next matchup that we have?
To close it out,
yeah.
We got the Bengals going into Baltimore. Both teams, shaky starts the season. Both quarterbacks have been hurt at some point.
Yep.
I think we're getting a good matchup in Joe Burrow versus Lamar Jackson. What are you looking forward to?
I mean, Joe B is back in the place to be. Is it in Cincy or are we going to Baltimore?
We're going to Baltimore.
We're going to Baltimore.
At night.
At night.
Yeah. Scary.
Okay, so
the
no hesitation.
The are going to be hunted.
Yeah. So no hesitation. I'm taking the Ravens. Would you agree?
I mean, I'm excited for Joe Burrow to get back
on the
field.
I'm excited for Joe Burrow. I want to see him cook a little Chase Brown, little Jamar Chase. Because I think you said T. Higgins is out.
Bengals have just been battling injuries all season.
They've been battling injuries.
Trey Hendrickson's out as well.
Yeah.
The guy that they were able to keep for one more year, see how it goes. He's going to walk. It's all trending in the wrong direction.
It's one of these things with teams that have kind of put themselves in a tough position. You know, dig a hole that's tough to, you know, get out of. But this Ravens team, this Chiefs team, they find ways to win because they have to, because the playoffs are among us. At home, Ravens, at night, it's going to look scary. I'm assuming all black uniforms. This team is fun when they're on it. Obviously, the Lions made mincemeat, but that's what they do. This Bengals team, the defense, the everything, it's so iffy. And now you have Lamar back, Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews. I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see. That's all we have for this session of Open Mic. Thank you for listening.
Happy Turkey Day.
Lions and Packers kick off at 1 o'clock tomorrow. That game will be played on Fox. Chiefs and Cowboys at 4:30. That game will be on CBS. And then the Bengals and Ravens, the nightcap, that'll be at 8:20 on NBC. So a full slate of NFL football coming up on the Thanksgiving holiday. Lions and Packers tomorrow afternoon. And on Saturday, the game. Number 1 Ohio State and number 18 Michigan in Ann Arbor. The 9-2 Wolverines with the win could find themselves in the college football playoff. The Buckeyes, unbeaten at 11-0. They're looking to snap a 4-game losing streak against the team up north. Now, I grew up in Northwest Ohio, and this rivalry has been woven into the family, into our DNA since birth. My great-great-uncle Bob Chappius was an All-American and a Heisman runner-up for the Wolverines in the late 1940s. My uncle, my dad, my brother, they all attended Ohio State. We go back to the 10-year war of Woody and Bo, to Earl Bruce and Bo, to John Cooper and Gary Moeller, then Lloyd Carr, Jim Tressel, Jim Harbaugh, Urban Meyer, now Ryan Day and Sharon Moore. It's the greatest rivalry in sports, and that's not hyperbole. Images of Desmond Howard striking the pose, Tim Biakabutuka rushing for 313 yards, Charles Woodson's Heisman performance. Of course, the game of the century in 2006, number 1 versus number 2 in Columbus. I was at that game. So many memories. And sportscaster.com's Aiden Novak, who's now a student at Rochester Christian College, he chronicles the history and the campus traditions and the keys for both teams heading into Saturday showdown.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Aiden Novak from Sportscaster, and we are just days away from rivalry weekend in college football. Of course, you can't talk about rivalry weekend without bringing up perhaps the greatest rivalry in all of sports, the game. Michigan and Ohio State. The hate between these two teams has such a rich history accompanied with iconic traditions. Combine all that with high stakes at the end of the year, and the game stands atop the mountain of great college football rivalries. Starting off with some of the traditions, we're going to start off with the Buckeyes. They give out gold pants every single year that they beat Michigan. It's just a little pin or a keychain that every single player on the roster gets if they beat Michigan. Ryan Day has not beaten Michigan since 2019. None of his players on that roster have a single pair of gold pants. So they're looking to snap that streak this Saturday in 2025, 6 years later. As well as that, Ohio State, all across their campus in Columbus, they cross out every single M on their campus grounds. And it doesn't matter what it's on. It could be on the stadium. It could be on a sign by a building on campus. No matter where there is an M, they take red tape and put an X right across it all around campus. And of course, in terms of the rivalry, it's played as the last game of the year, game 12, every single season, and it is played annually at the end of November every single year. And as for Michigan, obviously, they run out, touch that M Go Blue banner every single game. But there was one year in 1973 where Ohio State says, we don't like this tradition. They run out of the tunnel, jump all over the banner, and tear it down. And speaking of 1973, this was part of a period where Michigan and Ohio State's rivalry might have been the most intense it has ever been. The 10-year war from 1969 to 1978 between Bo Schembechler, the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, and Woody Hayes of Ohio State. Michigan had the edge in the overall rivalry of the 10-year war, winning 5 games, losing 4, and tying one time. That iconic tie actually came in 1973, 10-10, where Ohio State ended up getting the bid to the Rose Bowl and the national championship fell into their arms. It all started with the 1969 iconic upset for Michigan over number one Ohio State in Ann Arbor that sparked the 10-year war, and it was a battle for the ages for a decade between Bo Schembechler's Wolverines and Woody Hayes Buckeyes. Fast forward to 1991, the iconic punt return by Desmond Howard at the Big House, striking the Heisman pose in the corner of the end zone. He would go on to win the Heisman Trophy. Michigan would win that game. Fast forward again, 2006, what many called the game of the century. Number one, Ohio State. Number two, Michigan in Columbus. Ohio State would end up winning that game 42-39, and an absolute thriller between the two top teams in the country. And Ohio State in that period won 15 out of 16 games against the Wolverines from 2004 to 2019, including that game of the century. 2019, like I said, last time Ryan Day won against Michigan, his only win over the Wolverines. And the Wolverines have a 4-game winning streak from 2021 to 2024, and that is where the rivalry stands today as we come up just a few days short of the game in Ann Arbor for 2025. Keys to the game this year. For Michigan, they got to put pressure on Julian Sain early and often, force him to make errant throws. He has what many thought was quietly one of the best seasons in college football, completing 80% of his passes. That's not quiet anymore. He is now second in the Heisman voting behind Indiana's quarterback Fernando Mendoza. Michigan's got to get him off his game early and often. On the offensive side, the Maize and Blue must sustain drives to keep the ball out of the hands of OSU's explosive offense. That is going to be a challenge, though. Ohio State, the number one scoring defense in the country, allowing only 7.5 points per game, which is absolutely unbelievable and arguably the best Ohio State defense Ryan Day has ever had. Establish the ground game for Michigan. Win that battle in the trenches. Be tougher than the Buckeyes. It was the formula that beat OSU 4 years in a row in the 2020s decade, and Michigan must be the tougher team if they want to stand any chance against this juggernaut of Ohio State. Now for the Buckeyes. Get Bo Jackson going on the ground. They got to get Bo Jackson going on the ground. He has had a sneaky good season for the Buckeyes, and they need to open up the passing lanes for Julian Sain to find his superstar receivers, Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate, and Brandon Innes, as well as transfer tight end from Purdue, Max Clair. On the defensive side, they need to force Bryce Underwood into tight throws. They need to get inside the pocket, get pressure, get him out of the pocket, expose his inexperience. He is only an 18-year-old freshman. His first time playing in the game in his life, and they need to make him make mistakes, expose that inexperience this Saturday. And of course, the biggest key of them all, stop the run. Ohio State has not stopped the run for anything the past four seasons, and it was especially exposed in 2022 and 2024 in Columbus. Donovan Edwards, two huge touchdown runs in 2022. And then in 2024, Michigan had 62 passing yards and still won the game. They won the game all on the ground. Ohio State needs to change that this year. If they really, really, really want to beat Michigan, they got to stop the run. They need to prove that they're tougher than the Michigan offensive line, which is very young, and contain the young running backs of Jordan Marshall and Bryson Kuzdahl. Add all that up, we've got another thriller setting up on Saturday and another rendition of the game. Can't wait for it. For sportscaster.com, I'm Aiden Novak.
That was Sportscaster's Aiden Novak setting the table. Kickoff between the Buckeyes and Wolverines coming up on Saturday at noon in Ann Arbor. Where will you be as you watch the game? Maybe you'll be headed to Ann Arbor. I wish I could be myself. Well, it just might be the greatest week on the calendar for football fans in the great state of Michigan. From the NFL Thanksgiving Day tradition to the greatest rivalry in college football to the MHSAA state football finals, all in action all over the next 4 days. The high school state finals are split over 2 days. Of course, they'll be contested once again at Ford Field. And both the finals are slated for Friday and Sunday. Divisions 8, 4, 6, and 2 will be contested on Friday. And then divisions 7, 4, 5, and 1 will be played on Sunday. And here to preview the entire high school slate is sportscaster.com's Taryn Fritching, a senior from Troy Athens High School. Taryn, take it away.
Hello, everyone. This is Taryn Fritching for sportscaster.com. And today we are going to be covering the MHSAA state championship games, which are on Friday, November 28th, and on Sunday, November 30th. It is sure to be two wonderful days of great, great football being held at Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm here to cover it all. So to start off, I will be starting off with Division 5, Notre Dame Prep, who's 11-2, versus Grand Rapids West Catholic, who is 12-1. Last time Notre Dame Prep went to the state championship game was in 2011. That is the only time they've been, and they are looking to turn that around. For Notre Dame Prep, some key players is outside linebacker and wide receiver Brody Sink, heavily recruited by MAC teams and is now a Miami of Ohio commit. In offensive tackle, defensive end Jack Williams, who's offered by Wayne State, and their quarterback Sam Stow, who's also offered by Wayne State. These guys are going to be huge. Going over to Grand Rapids West Catholic, the last time they went to the state championship game was in 2002 when they were a D6 team and they won 59-14. They have a 7-2 record in the state championship games all time. And that game is Sunday, November 30th at 4 p.m. Now, heading over to D4. There's something really special about this game. You have Divine Child, who is 12-1, and you have Hudsonville Unity Christian, who is 12-1 as well. But the big thing about this game is it's basically an Aiden Hutchinson and Isaac Tislaw matchup. Aiden Hutchinson went to Dearborn Divine Child, and Isaac Tislaw went to Hudsonville Unity Christian. Both amazing Detroit Lions players currently, and I am 100% sure that they will be there. Why not come to their alma mater game at Ford Field, right? So the last time Divine Child was in the state championship game was in 1985. Divine Child was in Class B, and they beat Wyoming Park 21-0. They have a 2-1 record overall. Some very key players for Divine Child. These are going to be where we start heating up. You have safety, running back, and cornerback Marcelo Vitti, who is an Iowa commit. You have quarterback Drew Sheridan, who has 8 offers, but he is a class of 2028. And then you also have wide receiver slash cornerback Antonio Solores Vitti. So I would assume that he's somewhat related to Marcelo, but he's an Eastern Michigan commit. These guys are absolutely huge and can play so many different positions, and they will be key for Divine Child on Friday. And the last time that Unity Christian made it to the state championship game was in 2021, where they lost to Chelsea 55-52. However, their last win was in 2018 where they beat Portland 42-7, and that 2018 team was one that Isaac Tesla was on. Some key players for Unity Christian, you have quarterback Justin Phoebus, wide receiver Josh Bremer, and defensive back Luke Vanderswag. Luke leads the team in interceptions and is going to be a key player on defense, and Justin and Josh are going to be very, very big on offense. And that game is Friday, November 28th at 12:30 p.m. Now, headed over to Division III, you have DeWitt, who is 13-0, versus Mount Pleasant, who is also 13-0. DeWitt has appeared in state championship games 7 times and has a 1-6 record. The last time that they were in the game was in 2021, where they lost to now Oregon quarterback Dante Moore and Detroit King 25-21. Now, with Mount Pleasant, they have been in the state championship game once, where they lost to Orchard Lake St. Mary's 45-7, and they're looking to turn it around. Some key players for Mount Pleasant is safety Will Garcia, who has an offer from Hope, and wide receiver cornerback and safety Riley Olson, who has an offer from Albion. This will be a good game. DeWitt has always kind of been at the top of that D3 pack, and I'm really excited to see what Mount Pleasant can do. And that game is Sunday, November 30th at 12 p.m. Now, heading into our big games, you have Division II, Dexter versus Orchard Lake St. Mary's. Dexter is 12-1, and Orchard Lake St. Mary's is 10-2. This is Dexter's first ever state championship game appearance, and it is going to be amazing to see what they can do. I have watched Dexter for a few years now, so these key players, they're very good. So, starting off with offensive tackle Owen Winder, who is an Iowa State commit. You have running back Nathan Gersh, who is a Toledo commit. And you have tight end, who this is a junior, by the way. Tight end Holden Nimi, who has 15 offers from Georgia, Alabama, UMiami, Michigan, Indiana, etc. Yes, he will be a great one to watch on Friday. And I'm so excited to see this Dexter team. I absolutely love them. Their one loss is always to Celine, who we know is a great, great team. Now, heading over to Orchard Lake St. Mary's, they are the reigning state champions for Division II, so they know what it's like to be in this situation. Last year, they beat Byron Center, and it was a tremendous game. Some key players for St. Mary's, quarterback Javen Gonzalez. Yes, he is Jermaine Gonzalez's son, but Javen Gonzalez knows what it's like to pass the ball, to run the ball. He's a great mobile quarterback, and he has 7 offers. So those guys will be very, very big on that offensive side of the ball when they play Friday, November 28th at 7 p.m. Dexter and Orchard Lake St. Mary's. And now to Division I, Detroit Cath Tech, 13-0. Detroit Catholic Central, 13-0. This is going to be a tremendous game, and I'm so glad that the bracket ended up this way, because Cath Tech are the reigning Division I state champs. But last year, how the bracket worked out was Cath Tech beat Catholic Central in the semifinals last year, 17-14, and it was a tremendous game in the freezing cold, but at least Ford Field has that roof, so now we can get a little bit of warmth. So last time Cath Tech went to the state finals was obviously last year, and they beat Hudsonville 42-20. They are 4-1 all-time in that state championship game. So some key players for the Cath Tech technicians. The most recruited, the most highly hyped up player in Michigan for this year, Corey Sadler Jr., who is a commit to UNC. He wants to go play under Bill Belichick, and he is tremendous. Then you have quarterback Donald Tabron, who is class of 2028, and he has 25 offers. Just wow. It helps when you have all of your guys that you have on Cath Tech. Cath Tech is a football powerhouse. And you have offensive tackle Khalif Canty Jr., who is a Mizzou commit. So Cath Tech is actively putting out amazing guys who are going to college, and I absolutely love them. And then heading over to DCC, they have been to the state finals 17 times, and their last being in 2016, where they actually lost to Cath Tech 49-20, and they have a record of 10-7. Some key players for Detroit Catholic Central is Benny Azuka, who is a Penn State commit. He is on the O-line. And then you have the two brothers. You have Samson Gash, who's a wide receiver. He's going to Michigan State. And then you have cornerback and a wide receiver, Gideon Gash, who has 13 offers. So the Gash brothers are tremendous. And there's another Gash that is also at Michigan State right now. So Cass Tech and Catholic Central is going to be a tremendous game. And that is on Sunday, November 30th at 7 p.m. That'll be the game to watch. But honestly, all of these are games to watch because every single team in these state finals games have worked so hard to get here. And it is about to be a great two slated day of just incredible, incredible football. These teams are coming from all around the state of Michigan just to play the one sport they love. And I am so sure that there are going to be amazing communities that have come to support them. And I absolutely love that. So make sure to get down to Ford Field on Friday, November 28th, and on Sunday, November 30th, to watch some amazing football. You will not regret it.
Way to go, Taryn. What a weekend. Whether you love high school, you love college, you love the NFL, it's all on tap over the next couple of days. And obviously a great time with the holidays, being able to spend it with your family. I know I'll be watching plenty of football. I imagine many of our listeners will be as well. So whoever you're rooting for, I hope they win. And we look forward to catching up with you again a week from tonight. Again, Sportscaster's Open Mic airs every Wednesday night from 8 to 9 o'clock here on WJR. Until next time, I'm Johnny Kane. Godspeed.